out there in podcast land. This is the Front Row Network. I'm your host, Brandon Davis, and the 92nd Annual Academy Awards are closing in as fast as they can, and we here at the Front Row are rapidly trying to get out our Oscar spotlights. And once again, we are bringing you one of our Best Picture winners here for this particular Oscar spotlight, and we are talking about probably one of the most hotly debated Best Picture nominees this year. We're discussing Taika Waititi's Jojo Rabbit, I guess the feel-good Nazi movie of the year.
Well, but there's yes. A lot.
Yeah.
Every season needs at least one of those, right?
Yes.
Springtime for Hitler.
Springtime for Hitler, the movie. A lot to unpack with this one. And, I was kind of thinking about it. And I remember when I saw the trailers come out this fall, just really, really fascinated by this kind of movie. And I remember right away, just the critical response. People either loved it or they hated it. So there's a lot to unpack here, a lot to talk about, and I'm anxious to hear my two co-host responses to this movie too. I've got with me Ryan Lutens. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Brandon. Thanks for having me. I can't wait to talk about Mel Brooks' vision come to life.
Right. And I also have with me.
Oh, please.
I also you're fine. I also have with us Brett Rutherford. How's it going, Brett?
Hello there. Hello. much more inspired than Mr. Brooks. But anyway, go ahead.
Brett, I can't wait to hear. You're a co-host for Beyond the Mouse, and you're going to be talking about Hitler. This is going to be great.
Well, it's Tuesday. It's what I do.
Right. You know, I was thinking, though, some of the World War II propaganda that Disney did in the 40s kind of had a similar visual style to this. So we will. So as we mentioned before, though, this movie directed by Taika Waititi, who kind of made a splash just a couple years ago with movies like Thor Ragnarok. He has a very specific visual style that is not everyone's cup of tea, but I think that
the tea, babies. My gosh. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I personally do enjoy his work. I think we don't have too many original visionary filmmakers around nowadays, and he definitely is one of them. So, Brett, you seem to have a strong opinion. Let's start with your first impressions of Jojo Rabbit.
I thought, you kind of don't know what to think, but because I don't know exactly where it fits, I thought it was excellent filmmaking on several levels. I enjoy the casting. The production design was awesome. The cinematography, along with the production design, and also I think the music, because it was such a juxtaposition, anachronistic sort of take on things. But what I especially like in most movies when they create their own language and then follow through with that the entire film, I guess you would call that a vision, but it's kind of this artistic language, and I really enjoyed that in this film.
It really sets its own rules, and mm-hmm. it lets you know the rules from the beginning, and you're right, it does follow them all the way through.
Yes.
Yeah. So
all the way to the bitter Hitler end.
Correct.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, what are your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts, like I had mentioned earlier, this is definitely like Mel Gibson satire. It's not like you're sitting here and you're laughing, like, should I really be laughing at this? And I'm like, of course, it's funny. It's not meant to be taken seriously. This was a very serious topic, but the direction in which Taika Waititi really led this movie is it's not supposed to be taken seriously. This is a coming-of-age story, in essence, led by two great child actors. I mean, their chemistry.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
is beyond conversation. I mean, it's just it's off the levels, off the charts. These two guys are going to win Oscars in their lifetime if they keep with the business, which I hope they do. But this is definitely a coming of age story, and to use World War II as a backdrop and someone in the Hitler Youth is something that we've never seen before. And it's not a movie that takes itself seriously, and it knows it's not a movie that takes itself seriously. but it definitely has serious tones to it. You know, you're sitting there laughing one moment, and the next moment you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, intense.
So it's really a thought-provoking movie in that aspect, and I think that's why it got a lot of the hype that it got, because like you said, Brandon, it was either well-liked or people hated it. And, you know, to me, I'm one of those people like, okay, I get this movie. I understand why. So,
yeah, I remember sitting, I was sitting laying on my couch, watching it on my laptop, and I couldn't remember the last time I saw a movie where I literally gasped out loud. And I did a couple of times in this movie, because there are some things that just catch you off guard. I don't know how spoiler heavy we're supposed to get here in these Oscar spotlights or anything like that, but just to give our listeners kind of a, rundown of the film, though, the movie, Roman Griffith Davis plays a young guy named Johannes Betzler, who's called Jojo, and he's a 10-year-old boy who lives in Nazi Germany, and he's basically a Hitler youth, and he's going to Hitler youth training camps, and he is a vigilant little nasty Nazi, basically.
He really is.
Yeah, and he lives.
Want to be a little bit, but
pretty much. And his his imaginary friend is Hitler, although a very different vision of Hitler than we've learned over the years. Played by the director himself, which is pretty cool, I think. And he lives with his mother, and his father apparently is off fighting somewhere. They don't really explain that to you a ton in detail. He has a sister who's passed away, and he comes to find out that his mother is hiding a young Jewish girl in their attic. And it's basically, as Ryan mentioned, a coming-of-age story. And really, I think it's about how easily we can indoctrinate young people. And that's pretty much kind of where...
Or anyone.
Like, but then it's also about the fragility of that and how something so easily as being around different people and who are not in your echo chamber can make those walls come tumbling down. And it's told in a really, I think, creative way. The more and more I get away from it, the more I realize how unique this is. And I went back and rewatched some key scenes today. And there are some shots and some moments in this movie that will just stay with me for a while. And mm-hmm. Ryan, yeah. Ryan, you were talking about like bits of dialogue too, to stay with you.
Oh yeah. You know, and we'll get into that when we hit the spoilers, yeah. Especially when we come to film editing. I've got the perfect sequence to talk about why this movie is nominated for best film editing. But like some of the dialogue is just so zany. I was telling Brandon, one of my favorite parts is, you know, he's struggling with his identity. You know, he likes Elsa, but he still wants to be a Hitler youth. And Hitler comes in there and he's yelling and screaming and he nails that Hitler persona. Like it's almost like you're watching a newsreel. Mm-hmm. And then he goes up to Jojo and he goes, you know what? In other words, get your shit together. You're 10 years old. And he walks away. I mean, like,
because by then, you know, it should all be together.
It's so good.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's a movie that you're sitting there like, oh God, his conscience is falling in. And then there's just bam, a joke, you know, get your shit together. It's great. So,
well, as far as the dialogue, of course, my laugh out loud moment. And I think it's going to become certainly one of my, I don't know, maybe not most quotables, but certainly most favorite as well. Someone has to walk the clones. Someone has to walk the clones, you know. So I'm just like going, okay, I like that. Can we put that on a t-shirt? Oh my gosh. Well, someone has to walk the clones, you know. Crazy.
It's just amazing. There are moments where you're laughing out loud, and then the next moment it gives you such a strong bit of, you know, just something to think about. And it's rare that a movie does that. I don't know if we've had a really great satire in a long time to this extent. The movies that I thought about, I know that we've been talking about Mel Brooks and Springtime for Hitler and all that stuff, but I really thought about Chaplin's The Great Dictator. That's really something akin to this, or a movie like To Be or Not to Be, which also dealt with Nazi Germany. It's been a long time since we've really dealt with something as I, you know, it's weird when you kind of just look at the movie at face value, but it's a very sophisticated movie in terms of the way it's presenting itself. And I mean, right from the very beginning, when he is walking through the streets heading to camp and you hear the Beatles, you know, just play, you know, the fact that he's giving you this sort of more modern aesthetic with the backdrop of Nazi Germany in the 40s. And really, we've seen so many movies about this subject that take place during this time period, but not really from this point of view. I don't know if we've seen too many movies shown from like the Hitler Youth point of view and that sort of, you know, it's normally told more from the Jewish point of view. If you see like, you know, Holocaust movies and things like this. So this is pretty unique. And,
yes,
I definitely see why it is the best picture winner. I can see where, to some modern critic's eye, depending on the type of movies you've seen and the type of movies you haven't seen, I can see where this would be very jarring to some people. But I think this falls in line with some of the best satire that we've seen in a long time.
I'm just so surprised. I mean, I guess I haven't done my research well enough to see that people didn't like this. I'm like going, this is serious cinema, and it's done so well that, you know, cinema – files or people who enjoy the cinema, what are we called? Anyway, like going, how could you not like this? I mean, it's just so completely well done, and it explains what it's going to be. You know, it gives you the clues. It gives you the clues with the Beatles song at the beginning. I'm like, going, well, that wasn't the right time. So it clues you into, you know, the whole idea of the satire and the, it's just so cleverly done. And it was so interesting, I think, when I was reading about Taika. Actually, I did a little research and I watched his TED Talk. And it was interesting because it was about creativity. Well, it was about a whole lot of things. It was interesting. One of the things that he obsessed upon his youth, his mother is a Russian of Russian Jewish descent. And among the things that he, drew, he considers himself, a creative person, that paints and draws and found film and all this. But one of, I guess part of his early doodles were swastikas. And during this whole TED talk, he said that, you know, that probably was not a really good thing to have all over his notebook. So he turned them into windows and then, oh, well, everyone's going to see that it's still a swastika. So he turns them into doors and all this sort of stuff. And they were showing, you know, pictures of his art, his TED talk. And it was, so he's quite, he has an unusual take on things. And I think that we see that in his films. And please, he makes, Thor laugh, you know, I'm like, well, he made the, you know, that, so not to go back to that, but he made the funny Thor movie that everyone loves. And, you know, so anyway, so, but I thought that was interesting. The whole, I don't know, obsessive compulsive, thing that he has, but it was interesting.
I think he's definitely going to be a character to watch, you know, again, this year with all the movies that are in the Oscar hunt, a lot of these categories are stacked, and I don't know. I think that what Wakivi would have been in there, but again, we've just got like you know, Scorsese, Tarantino, Bong Joon-il or Hoon. So it's just, it's crazy.
Yep, it's a big year.
Yeah, and we'll get into the actual nominations here in just one second, but to tag off of what you said, Brett, about the swastikas and the windows, throughout this movie, there is moments of beauty that are covering such ugliness. And, and like, you know, I'm thinking, of course, you know, the scene where he's, you know, he's following the butterfly. And then of course, you know, it gets to the shot where I gasped the most in the movie, where you see his mother's feet dangling. And, you know, that to me was a cinematic moment if ever I've seen one, but yeah, there's just, you know, like him and his mother, you know, biking through the park, and then, you know, a a squad of, you know, soldiers ride by them, and you see all the grittiness of what's going on the world around him. But yeah, he really, that's a motif throughout this whole thing. So let's get into the actual nominations here. This movie's nominated for 6 Oscars. It's nominated for the big prize, Best Picture. It's nominated for Supporting Actress for Scarlett Johansson, Best Adapted Screenplay for Waititi, Best Production Design, Best Costume Design, and Best Film Editing. So it's been recognized throughout all the different categories here. So let's just start at the bottom and work our way up to the big one. Film editing. Ryan, I know you have a couple thoughts on editing. We'll start with you.
You know, you'd already alluded to it. This movie and the way that it edits its shots to be a cohesive film is done remarkably well. The scene I was talking about, Brandon, is one that you had just said. That whole scene, he's just doing his job. He's setting up the propaganda. And the way that it is shot and edited, it is done so flawlessly that you're sitting there with him. Oh, you're enjoying the beauty of this butterfly. Now, moments before, you had mentioned he was with his mom in the park. And in that scene, we see her up and alive and dancing, and he's paying attention to her shoes. That scene is also edited very well, because then we see that same shot, but this time it is lifeless, dangling feet. And the emotion that kind of conjures, like you said, you gasp, you're like, oh crap. Here's a heartfelt moment, but the way that it was edited really tugged at your heartstrings. Sure. Because it goes from him down there, and then he's hugging his mom's leg, and then it cuts away and it's edited to where he's like kneeling down and just watching. And it just really plays at your heart, because you're sitting here laughing, have a good time, and there's this serious moment. Another editing thing that I really enjoyed was as Jojo's town is being overrun by Soviets and Americans, there's a scene where he's kind of going through the carnage, and the shot pans back and it's him in the center of the frame. You've got all these Hitler youths running, and just how that is edited, because then it switched to him on the side and you just see these kids running, and it's just real powerful. It really gives purpose to the movie and really beats home that message of growing up and being young and being a kid. It really moved me. So, I mean, that was my take on the whole editing thing. So I don't
that, go from and, there. Well, and I was gonna, that whole, you know, climactic scene of when, you know, the Germans are losing the war and it's kind of their last stand there. Some of the things that sometimes bug me about movies about any kind of war, though, is that the editing sometimes, you know, it goes too much in on the action, and it's too choppy. And this, you never lose the faces, you never lose the characters, you never lose what it's about. And it really, like you said, it's edited as if it is from a child's point of view. And that's what I really appreciate about it. Brett, any comments on the editing?
Again, well, it kind of goes to the editing and just kind of the storytelling with the blue butterfly, yeah. Because I guess there's some thought out there that that butterflies especially are sort of manifestations of I guess visits from those from loved ones from beyond, and I found that as an interesting idea. You know, when the butterfly was moving there, I'm like going, I don't know if that's what his intention, but it's out there enough that I think that it does make that comment. But I think I think the editing along with the art direction, which I don't think it was nominated for art direction, but it was stunning. I enjoyed it. I love the color palettes and all of that, and the lighting was really good.
It is nominated for production design, which is different.
Yay!
which is different from art direction, but yeah, and we can actually move on to that one. But yeah, the entire design of this movie is so, because it looks historically accurate, but it's also very stylized.
Yeah. And, oh yeah.
And that's what I really appreciate. The streets have a look of their own, and I love the way that he sets up, you know, the look of all the houses and everything. And it just, like you said, it's Nazi Germany from a child's point of view, so it looks almost fairy tale like, but there's this underlying darkness underneath. And I think the way everything is set up really brings that home.
I agree.
For me, it was the house where Jojo lived. I mean, as a set piece, it was really well done because there's so many different elements to the house, especially when he finds the hidden compartment. You would never think that when you're initially watching the film. And his room, whoever designed Jojo's room, which obviously is a production design, but everything about that room just screamed kid indoctrined in Nazi German time. I mean, it was just flawless. Every little minute thing this movie could have possibly thought of did. I mean, the camp where he went to go learn how to hate Jews. I mean, everything about that and how everything was designed there really gave the feel that you were at a day camp for these Hitler youth. I mean, it was just crazy.
Right. Yeah. The little bit of design that got me was Elsa's hiding place and how they designed that. When you think of hiding places, you think of something like, you know, if you've seen The Diary of Anne Frank, you know, the little attic or something like this. Well, this is even more claustrophobic than that. So to think of someone living there for possibly years at a time, I mean, you put yourself in that situation right away. And that's the most, I think that's the most special thing I can say about the production design, is I felt like I was there most of the time, because everything felt so real and tangible. Yeah.
I agree.
Again, yes, they created a language all the way through all of the elements and followed through. Loved it.
Yep. So the next award it is nominated for is costume design. And it has a lot of competition within this category this year. And, period movie. Period movies usually do well, but as our fearless editor-in-chief likes to say, you usually vote for the movie that has the biggest hoop skirts.
And I think that'll be Little Women.
I think Little Women might have this beat, although I will say the costume design is pretty great in this. It really sticks to the period, but once again, it's stylized. Brett, do you have any thoughts on the costumes?
Other than it worked. It worked. Back to costume design for the, I also think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, is something that might win too, but that's for another show. The costume design, I just think, Scarlett Johansson's costumes are, beautiful, functional, everyone, I just loved it. I really enjoy this film. If you haven't heard, you can tell now. Anyway, I'll admit, go ahead.
I enjoyed the costumes a lot. One thing, all the Nazi uniforms were excellent. I think Yoki's paper uniform was a brilliant piece of costume work. I thought that was awesome, especially when he's running around in the end, it's all frayed and tattered. Sam Rockwell's
Garish
uniform at the end was spot on.
That he designed himself.
Yeah. Right. So. Holy crap. these guys went.
I love the little outfit he's wearing when he's collecting metal. The little robot type thing. Yeah.
But I mean, one thing that really needs to be brought forth in this movie is, and you don't really see it much in the Tarantino movie, is the shoes. They did with the shoes play a very huge role. And you look at these shoes, and these shoes hit the 1930s, 1940s style, very German, not a lot of color. And if there is, it's just mainly red. It's almost down to the most minute details. And like we were saying, out of the costume movies, we've got four period pieces and a comic book movie. So we got Joker, Once Upon a Time, The Irishman, Little Women, and of course, first JoJo. So again, this category is going to be stacked. And, you know, Brett, I kind of agree with what you said. I Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is going to be a little bit more on the tougher side to beat, because 70s style is a lot of fun, but so is Big Hoop Skirts. But no, this movie really paid attention to the detail, both in the production design, but I think costume design a little bit more, because they were so elegant.
Well, so, and can you imagine that when they were shopping this show to be so specific, to find out that, you know, now shoestrings are really, really important in this film.
Right,
yeah. Shoes and shoestrings. It's about the shoestrings. So.
And when, you know, costumes are tied into the plot, I mean, it's more than just designing a nice looking outfit for Scarlett Johansson. This actually ties into the plot and, you know, pays off in one of the biggest shots in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's the biggest reveal.
Yeah. And I mean, but there's other, I mean, the Rebel Wilson's, you know, out, you know, her uniforms are fun.
I love the casting. Austin Powers. Are we going to talk about the casting? Sorry. Go ahead.
We will.
Gosh.
And, that 40s style is so unique and succinct, and you know, especially in Germany, it's you know, they dressed a little differently than we did here, so to capture that time and place, I think was really successful. So yeah, once again, like, you know, this movie excels in so many areas, but there's like, this year was such an embarrassment of riches. It's amazing that we've got this much to talk about here. But so next award coming up is adapted screenplay, which Taika Waititi wrote the script, and we've already mentioned, you know, so many great bits of dialogue and such an amazing satirical story with so many great ideas. A stacked year, but I, you know, if I was an Oscar voter, this is one that would really be on my radar.
This one's going to be, adapted screenplay is going to be the hardest one for me to pick a winner, because there's a lot of good stuff there. You know, out of the big eight, you know, the four acting, motion picture, director, and then you have the two screenplays. This is nominated for three. I wish it would have been nominated for more. I'm going to talk about casting in motion picture when we talk about the movie as a whole. Yeah. But the writing that this guy gives is really spot on. It's satirical. It's dramatic. It is, you know, suspenseful. It's just everything that it needs to be. And it's based off of the book. I forget the book title as of now.
Caging Skies.
Caging Skies.
Yeah.
But, you know, Taika Waititi, I mean, he did What We Do in the Shadows. He did Thor. He can take something and he can really bring it together. I mean, no one ever thought that a movie about vampires was going to be so good, but that movie killed it. And then it spawned a TV show. And then, you know, the first two Thors, let's face it, they weren't the best. And this third movie blew them all out of the water because it gave it to a director and a writer who had vision. And you get his vision all the way through this script. You know, and he's adapting it. So he might change some things here and there, but he is giving us a story that he wants told. And you feel that when you're watching this film. So that's my thought on adapted screenplay.
The adapted screenplay category is such a strange one, because it's, how do you judge it? Do you judge it by the person who brings out the best of the original source material, or is it someone who takes the original source material and does and brings it out into a whole new vision? I guess it's subjective that way. But, you know, I mean, he's up against some tough contenders, but I think of the five, he really is the one that really took the original source material and made something totally different with it. So
I agree.
So if you're voting that way, then yeah.
I think his biggest competition, this is just me, because I tend to look at the Academy Awards very, I don't know. Anyway, I think they're going to give it to Gerda because they snubbed her for director, which is kind of a shame, because really I could see it as Little Women or JoJo. So I don't know. Brett, what do you think?
They do that with the awards, with the Academy Awards. You know,
you sound shocked.
Based on merit and art, it's based that it's based on politics and commercial things and other things. Oh, wow. My gosh, the scales have fallen from my eyes at last.
Oh, gee.
I like this. You know, well, yeah, dripping with sarcasm just a little. Sorry, just a little.
So. Are we in the movie?
Hey. Okay. On Tuesdays, right. I play Hitler. Anyway, just kidding.
Oh, man. I can't wait for this to air.
We're going. We just need to do, yeah, sound bites out of context.
And then, yep.
So, well.
On Tuesdays, I play Hitler. I'm sorry. I snore. Sorry.
That's all right. Let's talk about, we got two more categories here, and then we'll talk about other aspects here. But kind of one of the ones that is getting a lot of conversation, mainly because Scarlett Johansson is one of the few in Hollywood history to do it. She's nominated in both lead and supporting in the same year. This is one of the ones that kind of, and Ryan, you and I were talking about this. I think she's fine in the movie. But
I feel so left out. My gosh, I'm so late to this conversation.
But I don't necessarily know if this is a performance I would have nominated for an Oscar. I think she's charming. This is one of the warmest performances I've ever seen Scarlett Johansson give. But in such a crowded year, I don't know that this is one of the ways I would have gone. And Ryan, I think you agree.
Go ahead, Brett.
Well, especially on second viewing, when you know what happens in the film and you watch it this time, you see a little bit more into the performances, and at least I did. And I thought, and so where I was believing, I know the whole Nazi German thing for everyone the first time around. You know, I mean, there are clues that. Well, she's hiding it, you know, a Jewish girl. So I guess, okay, this doesn't make sense. Please, let's just see. The second time through, there were more, I enjoyed her nuances and the inklings that we had that there's more going on to her story. There, how's that? I turned that one around a little bit. Sorry.
I like it. You know, it's not that it's not that I don't think that she shouldn't be nominated, because out of the two that she is nominated for, I feel like she should be nominated for JoJo as opposed to Marriage Story. You know, call me crazy. But to me, you know, as a supporting actor, you are there to bring out and to support, you're there to support the other characters, but you're there to do it in a way that you bring out true character for the other actors. And I was telling Brandon that, you know, there's always one scene. Whenever there's an acting category, you always can refer to one scene that really nails it. One thing that I think of is, you know, Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight, and that scene is when hanging upside down. That really encapsulates what his thing is to be the Joker. But with her, I think that one scene is when she is talking to Elsa in the attic, and they're having that heart-to-heart talk about being a woman. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think that really sold me on why she should be best supporting actress. Not to mention that, you know, anytime that there's a supporting role and they die, they tend to get nominated.
Right.
But, out of the two performances that she gave this year that were nominated, I feel more strongly about Jojo Rabbit, but still, I am in the camp of J-Lo was robbed, and I believe that ScarJo took her spot. So I'm still going to be salty about that. So that's me.
Salty. Well, I'm sure somewhere Jennifer Lopez is loving you. So
there could be worse.
No,
things.
I think it was so nice to see. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, I just think that it's so good to see her be an actress of great depth. You know, we're used to seeing her in Marvel films, and unlike directors, don't have an axe to grind towards the Marvel cinematic universe. But we've seen her in that for such a long time that it's so nice to see her do these films that she's had this year. You know, it sort of takes us back to other films that she's done in the past where she shows, you know, her great range and great quality. So I'm a fan of both of her performances, and I almost like Marriage Story better, but that's just me. So.
Well, and I think
it was so real.
And I think that's why she's having such a banner year. And you know, not to exclude you again, Brett, but Ryan and I were talking before the podcast started.
But, I'm like going, what is this? Do you have coffee?
but I always said Scarlett Johansson, I think she's very talented, but she's an actress that always seems a little cold to me. I have trouble relating to her sometimes just because I don't think she lets you in as much as other actresses do. But I think in terms of Marriage Story and this, when an actress really steps out of the zone that you're used to seeing them in, the Academy likes to recognize that. And so because she turned out, you know, I enjoyed her performance in Marriage Story. I think she's heartbreaking. I think this is their year to really recognize her. Unfortunately, I don't think she's going to win either one, but, you know, like we said, it's a stacked year.
Oh, well, she's invited to the party, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. But you know, she's part of history being one of those few people nominated in both categories on the same year. So, great for her. And, she lends star power to the movie. So that's something that I think really helps an indie movie like this as well. Yeah, Ryan.
You know, just on the top, like, she deserved the nomination for Marriage Story, but, I'm going back to that scene thing again.
Yeah.
The scene where they are fighting in Adam Driver's living room is the most compelling thing to watch. And I think that's Adam Driver's scene. Like, that's the reason why he got nominated for an Oscar. Yeah. He is so good in that. But sometimes when I'm watching Scarlett Johansson in that scene, I'm just not getting it. You know, I just don't know if the chemistry wasn't there, but Adam Driver is just flawless. Yeah. I can't put it into words. It just felt different. Whereas in Jojo Rabbit, when she is talking to Elsa, it was very heartwarming for me, and I felt it. You know, I was like, she's trying to help this girl in a world that is helpless, and I felt that through her performance. And that's why I think she did deserve the supporting actress nod.
Right. Yeah. So, once again, another, you know, and we've talked before, the Oscars there's always going to be at least one surprise and one upset. So
I think Laura Dern knows what's going on.
So. Yeah, probably.
Did we say Laura Dern?
Yeah.
Don't get me started. Okay. All she's doing is playing Big Little Lies.
But you know, this is my, and not to go off of Jojo Rabbit, but this is my theory with the acting categories this year. I think this is Oscar's year to atone for missed opportunities in the last year, because you look at Joaquin Phoenix, Laura Dern, and Brad Pitt, all three who have given very valuable, you know, great performances in the past. And so this is the year to give those to them. And even though Renee Zellweger has won an Oscar already, this is their way to correct the wrong of never honoring Judy Garland in the past. So I think this is kind of their year.
Yeah.
I think this is kind of the year of just saying, okay, well, with all four, we'll just make up for mistakes that we've made. But...
self, when we're reading those scripts, you know, let's do characters that never got their justice in the Oscar world.
So we'll see if that pans out. But coming up now, we'll go to the last category, and it's nominated for the big prize, Best Picture. And and we've talked about, you know, casting here. I wish there was an Oscar for casting director, which there isn't, because I think casting, you know, 90% of the success of your movie is casting. And I think the reason, I think the reason this is up for Best Picture is mainly because of the performances of the cast.
Fox News star Gretchen Carlson dropped a baby.
Oh yeah. Hands it's down. So well cast. I mean, you know, I mean, can Sam Rockwell, well, do anything badly or wrong? Yeah. Isn't he always just spot on perfect?
We had mentioned that.
Brent. Oh my gosh! And
if there's anybody in this movie who should get like the actor award, get Best Actor, And Sam Rockwell should be best supporting.
Yeah.
Yes, he should. I agree.
Because he was just there. And, you know, he's a guy that plays a Hitler captain, and he got hurt. So then he's in charge of these little kids, and he sees Rosie for who she is. But he saves JoJo in the end. And that, again, it sparks hope. And his character is so nuanced, and it's excellent. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and just that scene where, you know, his very last scene before he gets killed, where he's, you know, saving JoJo by pretending he's a little Jewish kid. I mean, just for that scene alone, I think that's his Oscar scene right there. But also the scene where they're investigating inside mm-hmm. JoJo's house, and he's covering basically for Elsa and JoJo. Of course, we don't know he's covering at the time. We find out later. But yeah, I think every scene that he's in, because in the beginning, he's playing very over the top Nazi humor comedy, and then little by little, the character gets more and more fleshed out as you go along.
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
But yeah, overall though, with the whole Best Picture thing, I mean, this is the kind of movie the Oscars have always loved to honor, because it's a human story, but it's set against, you know, a historical backdrop, which, you know, the Oscars always like. But I think this is very unique. I mean, we've seen a lot of World War II, Holocaust, you know, Nazi era movies nominated over the years, but I can't remember anyone quite like this.
You know, it's hard.
No, that's. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, it's hard to make comedy out of a tragedy, mm-hmm. and yet Waititi did it. And it's not so much that he's poking fun at the tragedy.
No,
he's poking fun of almost the situation, because it took to light a kid who was so radicalized, mm-hmm. and that he didn't really see the human emotion into it until the one human he loved was taken away. And that's what makes this movie work on such a deeper level. And that, of course, is brought forth. We talked about the casting, but these two young kids. Mm. What was the guy, the little boy's name again? I'm sorry.
Oh, Roman. Roman Griffin
Davis.
Archie
Yates?
Yep, and Thomas and McKenzie.
Yeah. Yeah.
These two the other kids.
What?
Thomas and McKenzie, who played Elsa, and then Elsa. Roman Griffin Davis, who played JoJo. These two kids.
Oh yeah. No, I like the Yorkie guy, his friend.
Oh yeah, Yorkie.
He's great too.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, I'm he was amazing. He was just, you know, I'm never going to die. They can't kill me. You know, that sort of thing.
even in his paper uniform. You know, but those two kids have got
so good.
Huge futures. But I mean, it's just the way they acted, the way they told the story. That is why this film is nominated for best motion picture of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think a lot of the people that were initially introduced to the movie didn't like it, because they're like, should we really like a movie that's funny about Germans and Jews? And then people were realizing it's a satire and it's not meant to be taken seriously. And that's when I think it started to pick up some steam and things along those lines. But I mean, it is a movie that is funny, but it makes you think. And that's what I think the Academy goes for, is they look for movies that have that lasting impact on you, who make you think.
Right.
Well, I think the timing of this film is, is very interesting too, because of the message of the propaganda and how easily it wasn't just the children, it was everyone who was indoctrinated into, you know, this thought,
right,
and this way of thinking. And I think that that could happen at any time, even today. So I think that's another message of this film, is to, you know, do some thinking and find real people. Don't believe everything someone says about someone who is supposed to be your enemy, to really try to find out for yourself the truth about all of that. So, sorry.
Yeah, it really
I'm off my soapbox.
No, that's fine. I was going to say this movie is awesome. Yeah, I was going to say this movie's also about, you know, echo chambers. You know, if you spend too much time in your own echo chamber and don't spend time with people outside of it, you know, you're going to, you know, not see the forest for the trees. So, yeah. So really.
And the craziness, you know, the absurd, you know, the absurdities, you know, that you just kind of, well, that's the way they are, you know, mm-hmm. like going, oh, God.
And coming
I thought age. It was very poignant.
Yeah, and as a coming-of-age movie, this kid had no idea who he was. He didn't know his identity. His dad was off fighting for the Germans. He was living in Germany. He was Aryan, so he thought this is what he had to do. And so he just made up in his mind a fictitious Adolf Hitler, and he just was living the life he thought he was supposed to live until he saw what his mother had done and realized that humanity is still a thing. And that's awesome storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. As we kind of get to the point where we wrap this up, or is there any category, you know, we talked about other areas, any category where you really think this movie got snubbed?
Director.
Yeah.
I think Waititi should have been nominated. His vision, it's not going away. And I would have loved for this to have been his first nomination because it's definitely a film that I'll remember. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately he got, but I don't think he's going away.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, you know, in a perfect world, I think Roman Griffin Davis would have been nominated for best actor, but when you look at the best actor list, there's not anyone that I would take off to put him on. Right. So, yep. you know,
right. It was a tough year. So,
yeah. So, but for a child actor to be able to go into that kind of depth with those kind of very sophisticated ideas and to successfully pull it off. I mean, he got a Globe nomination and forever in his highlight reel of his movie career, there's going to be a scene of him kicking Hitler out a window. So.
Well, not to mention there's always that.
When any 10-year-old would want to say, which is F you Hitler, and then kicking it out the window. Thomasin McKenzie, I think she should have been nominated for even best supporting actress because last year she was in Leave No Trace and she was remarkable in that. And this year she was great in JoJo. She's going to be one to watch as she continues her career.
The scene where he stabs her in the shoulder is played so beautifully by both of them.
Yes, and, another great work of editing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, absolutely. There's so many more. And I really, as we kind of wrap this up here, and we'll get into more of our details about the Oscar stuff coming up here, but really, I would encourage people to watch this. I know that on the surface, you know, some people might be turned off saying this kind of movie's not my kind of thing. But I really think there's something in this that can really speak to anybody. And you might be off, it might be off putting for you in the first couple minutes or so, but stick with it and you're going to get caught up into the world because by the end of it, it's a really unique experience.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Loved it.
Yep.
Yep.
Awesome. So as we wrap
this up. Did I tell you how much I enjoyed this film? Okay.
Maybe one more time, Brett. No.
have I made that clear? Okay. Yep. Well, I did. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
No, just saying that we're keeping on ramping up our Oscar spotlights here. You're going to keep getting them up until February 9th when the Oscars air on ABC. And just a reminder, we are having our second annual Front Row Network host the Oscars party at the Hoagland Center in Springfield, 7 p.m. There's going to be trivia contests, ballots, Oscar ballots. There's going to be cash bar, snacks, everything you could want. And most of us will be there calling up the night. Yes, Ryan, what were you?
There's that. The best dress costume.
Best dress contest, yes. So a lot of different things to look forward to. Most of us will be there. And Ryan, want to tell them about our Outguess the Front Row ballot contest?
Yeah, just like we did for the Golden Globes, we're going to put together our own ballot. And we're going to see which of the Front Row hosts has the best Oscar foresight in guessing who's going to take home the top prizes. We'll probably be doing that live as the event at the Hoagland Center goes on. I will be up here because I have a 5-month-old son, but I will be sending results to Jeremy as I get them as soon as awards are announced. So it'll be fun to do that as we tally up our guest ballot. So yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah. Awesome. So as we work,
so much fun. Oh my gosh, who knew all this could be so much fun?
I know. I know.
And the Oscars, it's the most magical time of the year.
We've got more Oscar content coming up, not only with spotlights, Aaron and who else was on that with? Oh, Aaron and Eric and I. I've been on so many lately, I forget who I was on with who. But Aaron and Eric and I recorded our classics for the month, the best picture winner of 1960, The Apartment. And we're discussing that. And then I'm doing an Oscar spotlight for Judy sometime coming in the near future. And then I will be joining Brett, Vanessa, and Craig for this month's Behind the Mouse, Beyond the Mouse, where we talk about great Oscar Beyond moments. Great Oscar moments in Disney history. So, Brett, what do you have coming up? Are you on any more spotlights?
Yes, I'm doing Parasite with Ryan, right?
Yep.
Right? Yes.
Hello? Yep.
And and I think, let's see, and I'm doing a Bombshell. I'm we're discussing Bombshell, and I don't know if I have any others or not, but Cool. Those I'm looking forward to all of them. See, it'd be very hard for me to pick best picture if it was entirely up to me. You know, but it's not, thank goodness. So.
You know, I can honestly say this year I have enjoyed the majority of the nominated movies, which is this is a good year. Good year. Ryan, what do you have coming up?
This is a good year because I had to watch that Thread movie a couple years ago. Oh, my God. Anyway. Oh, my gosh. Don't even. I'm like going, and that was the last film. Well, it's sad. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sorry. Apparently, I'm not over that one yet.
January, we already released our When Harry Met Sally, because that movie is, New Year's Eve is a big part. I recorded that with Vanessa. I've got two more Oscar spotlights coming up, which is, I'm doing Ford versus Ferrari tomorrow. And then I'm doing Parasite with, Brett on Thursday. I can't wait to talk about that movie.
Yes. And we have a guest, Ethan.
It's going to be Ethan awesome. And then I don't know how many categories I'll get with in our Oscar breakdown, but that's going to be coming up leading up to the Oscar, where we basically break down is it up for the big eight. I don't know. And then
it's February, a busy month.
It is. It's a very busy month for us movie reviewers. Yeah. And then February, I might be doing a crossover with classic, talking about the 100th anniversary of a particular horror movie. Otherwise, I'm going to do Tremors because it's 30 years old.
Awesome.
I haven't decided yet.
Awesome. So, yeah, plenty.
I'm sorry, I should know this, but Ryan, do you do, do you do the Guilty Pleasures or which ones did you do?
I do the Flashbacks.
Because I have, anyway. I big do the businesses. Flashbacks. Oh, Flashbacks. Would Big Business be, I'm trying to get Big Business out there. So, as I can, because it's going to be available on Disney Plus, so the whole world can revisit the gloriousness that is Lily Tomlin and Bette Midler, and one of their finest.
Go ahead. Let's do a crossover event, Brett. Because that movie was what?
Yay!
Yeah, that was 88. I'm on board it. That's a flashback. Let's do it. We'll talk.
Yay! I have a taker. Thank you. Yes. Awesome. We're doing business here. I hope all of you people are enjoying our business. Yeah. But yes, okay, go ahead.
No, absolutely. There never-ending content coming from the front row here, which is fantastic. We love doing it. As long as you listen, we'll keep doing it. So more Oscar spotlights on the way, more classics, flashbacks, Beyond the Mouse, everything. So as we wrap up our discussion of Jojo Rabbit, I am Brandon Davis.
I'm Ryan Lutens.
And I'm Brett Rutherford.
And we will see you in the front row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org.